we were up till 4 a.m. the day of launch. And then we went to lie down for like 2 hours. I didn't sleep in that 2 hours. I went to lie down in bed for a bit. And when we woke up or got back down to our computer, I jumped on a call with him right away. And we refreshed the sales. And like I said, we haven't announced it at all, but it already made $40,000 within that like two hours.
You're listening to the Yo Podcast with Rob Hope.
Steve Shoga is a designer and maker from Kitchener, Ontario, Canada. His refactoring UI book he co-wrote with Adam Wathan was a massive success. So I try to break down the full 18-month execution leading up to the launch. We also go deep discussing low self-esteem, reacting to pricing complaints, influential marketing channels, and how he meticulously constructs those viral design tips on Twitter. Yo, Steve, welcome to the show, man.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So you're calling from Kitchener, Ontario, Canada, right?
That's right, yeah. You know, we're about 100 kilometers outside of Toronto, just to give you some idea of where it is.
If my research is correct, BlackBerry put you guys on the map a bit.
That's right. Yeah, the CEO came out of University of Waterloo. The University of Waterloo kind of put us on the map, almost.
Okay.
And there's a lot of grads who come out of there, like engineering grads. And so we kind of have this tech thing going on here. And BlackBerry put us on the map, but then, you know, they're not really around. They still are around, actually.
Do you ever see any like diehard hipsters rolling BlackBerries in the wild?
I hear about people who I'll be at a conference and I'll talk about where I'm from and I'll say BlackBerry put us on the map, and someone will tell me how you know, someone they know still rocks a BlackBerry, but I don't know anyone who uses a BlackBerry anymore.
Crazy. So you graduated doing a multimedia course, but continued to do music arts program at the same college. Okay. With the hopes of being in the music industry. I want to know where you got this passion for music from. You know, it's usually a parent or a sibling.
Yeah, I picked up a guitar maybe when I was like 10 or 12. My great grandma passed away. And with that, I inherited like an old acoustic guitar. And I just started playing on that. And I got really into that. And I played guitar all through high school. And like back in high school, I really wanted to pursue music. I wanted to to be like in a touring band. That's what I wanted to do for my life, right? You know, then I had like my parents, they kind of pushed me probably in a more realistic direction. So they encouraged me to go to college. I was always pretty artistic, like not just in like in music, but like in art in general. I was always like really good at drawing and stuff when I was younger. And so I think they kind of just pushed me to go towards that. And they pushed me to take something that's a little more, well, they didn't push me towards the music at all. They pushed me towards like the multimedia, because the multimedia was like this, it was this course at Fanshawe College in London, Ontario. And it was kind of a wide range of things, right? Because I wasn't sure what I wanted to do. And it covered everything from graphic design to web design to a little bit of video editing. There was a little bit of audio production in that course. So it kind of got my hands on everything. And I really enjoyed the graphic design aspect of that and the web design aspect of that course. But the music industry arts program at Fanshawe, that was a really competitive program. I did apply for that originally and I didn't get accepted. You usually need like a general arts certificate or something before you get into that, just because it's so competitive. But after I finished multimedia, I had a little bit of college experience. And then I applied for that course again and I got accepted. So I decided to take that. And when I went into the music industry this time, when I went into school for it, I no longer had like my dream of like becoming like a touring artist, but I was more interested in the production side going into the course, like just being like a recording, like a producer inside the studio, right? But then as I got into the course, I got more interested into the business aspect, and I got more interested in the marketing of artists and all the business aspects of the music industry, right?
So this led you to interning at small record labels, doing like brochure and web stuff, right?
That's right. Yeah, I worked at, so it was a 2-year program. In the summer in between, I didn't get a part-time job or anything to make extra money. I moved to Toronto for the summer. My sister lived there, so I moved into her apartment, and I was interning at a small record label, and I was kind of on the street team.
Yeah. You were like ambassadors. Like,
yeah, I pretty much like hang up posters or hand out like flyers at concerts, right?
Yeah.
To fans. And it's just like promotional material for new artists or whatever, right?
Yeah.
So I was doing this that summer. But even at the small labels, I was doing a lot of the stuff I learned in multimedia, right? That appealed to them. When I kind of gave my resume, they liked that I kind of knew a little bit of graphic design and knew a little bit of web. And so I found myself doing a lot of that stuff, making like little pamphlets, designing pamphlets. And
please tell me this is where you learned HTML via MySpace band pages.
Yeah, I did do a little bit of that. Like, what year was this? This is like back in like 2008, maybe.
Yeah.
And like everything, I was still learning HTML. It was still new to me because everything I learned back in multimedia, I had forgotten, and I was kind of relearning it. And I was relearning stuff by like finding online tutorials, and like online tutorials for web design back in like 2007. They're not like
in 2000. Wow.
Yeah. It's not like you can just copy and paste code. And it, you know what I mean? Not like today, right?
No ways.
It's like, and so I was like, I was still learning all some of the basics. Like, it was like a Flash was still with Macromedia at that point, right? Yeah. And now it's, well, and now, and then it became an Adobe product, and now it's extinct.
It's dead.
Yeah. So I was doing a lot of the web and design stuff for these labels. And I realized I really like doing this stuff. And then when I graduated from music industry arts, I still tried to like, get a job at labels doing that kind of work. But this is in 2009 now. So this is like the peak of the recession. This is at a time when the music industry is just at its low, right? And I'm thinking, I really just enjoy doing graphic design web stuff. Why don't I just pursue that more and not have to like, why do I need to focus on just the music industry? But again, this is the 2009 recession. I couldn't find a job anywhere anyway. So I just spent time working on my portfolio. And what this was is just making a lot of perfecting my craft, like getting familiar with Photoshop again, learning how to code again, making my portfolio, which is just a bunch of like fake websites, right? Mm-hmm. They weren't like real or anything. They were just like kind of like making a fake website for like a construction company that never existed, just to
mock-ups,
make it look aesthetically pleasing, right?
I think everyone had one construction company in their portfolio.
Yeah, something like that. And I would look at like other portfolio sites of designers I admired, and I kind of look at like what kind of projects they're doing and make my own version of that project. And I think it's worth noting that like I spent a lot of time just recreating existing sites too that I liked, seeing how they did it, seeing how they got that look and feel,
okay,
seeing how they achieved that effect.
Hey, this is Mubs, former Product Hunt Maker of the Year. Best you hit subscribe as I'm coming up in the next Yo podcast talking about my 80 plus side projects.
Just to step quickly back into actual design, is that, you know, on the Laravel podcast, you mentioned that as a kid, your mom made you draw a horse and immediately identified your perception of depth.
Yeah.
Do you think you were simply born to design?
I don't know. I got told that story. Like, I don't remember this. This is like when I was like three, right? And my mom apparently handed me like a crayon or like a pencil or something and a paper and told me to draw this horse figurine that was in front of me. And you know when people draw like, they draw like people, they draw like figurines, they just draw like stick figures, right?
Yeah.
Apparently I drew like this dimension, right? I gave it like that three-dimensional look that not like a three-year-old would do.
Yeah, you like gave some shading.
Yeah, so I guess they saw this natural talent in me and they kind of just pushed me to do that. And I guess when they handed me like a pencil and a paper, I could just focus in on that. I could get lost in that, right? So
yeah, totally.
Like maybe there's a natural talent to it, but at a young age, I was just really, I really enjoyed doing it. And as a result, I got pushed to do it and I spent more time doing that. You know, I spent more and more years doing that.
And you learned to love it.
Yeah. Have you ever read the book Outliers by Malcolm Gladwell?
Yeah, I have.
Yeah, like I don't really, after reading that, I don't really believe in like natural talent. I kind of just believe in like
10,000 hours.
Yeah, I just spent a lot of time doing one thing and getting really good at it. And But going back to that story that my mom told me, maybe there is that is an interesting point there, right? So
yeah, but and I want to swing it back to the guitar playing. You know, you playing guitar till late at night. Did you play 10,000 hours of guitar?
Let's see. I started in like grade 8, and you know, I pretty much come home from school like at 3 o'clock and play for all into the evening. So, and I did that for like 4 or 5 years. So, you know, I spent a lot of time doing that. You know what's sad is I was in San Francisco last week for the Smashing conference.
Yeah, yeah.
And we did like a speaker's dinner at the Dropbox office. And at the Dropbox office, they have this little, they have like the drums, bass guitar, piano. They have like this little thing you can play, you can jam out on, right?
Sick.
So that was kind of cool. So I picked up the guitar and started playing it. And I cannot play anymore at all. Like, I mean, I can pick it up and I know the chords and stuff, but
you start doing like arpeggios or something.
Yeah, I can't play any of that stuff anymore. It's kind of sad, but I'm sure if I like actually spent time and picked it up and played it more, I'd get better at it. But it was kind of depressing because I just haven't played guitar for years.
Oh, dude, I could talk about music forever. Do we even have to talk about design?
We don't have to, man. I could talk about music forever too.
Okay, I'm going to throw one at you quick. So I throw this around, this one question we throw at our friends a lot because no one really knows the answer. What rock band formed in the past 20 years will be legendary still in 50 years? So like the Stones or Zeppelin. So like what rock band that formed in the past 20 years will still be legendary in 50 years? It's a difficult one.
Do they still have to be around?
They don't have to be around, but people will be listening to them constantly in 50 years.
I'd say like White Stripes is a good example of that.
Did they form in the last 20?
Oh, when did they form actually? That's a good question.
Let me get that up. Yeah, they started in 97. So that's 22.
Yeah, that's the closest thing I can think of that would be.
Anyway, I'm gonna let that sit with you and I'm gonna re-ask you at the end.
I think about that question. It's funny you ask that because I think about that every now and then about like rock bands that are relevant nowadays. And
I feel like rock has it is broad for sure as a genre, but you'll be noticing these headliners at Reading and Glastonbury, like they're introducing rap artists, and I'm nothing against it.
Yeah, you know what? Like I listen to a lot of electronic music now. Like, and I like high school Steve would be so disappointed with 30-year-old Steve. Like I used to like punk music and a lot of rock music, and I slowly shifted to. I like a lot of background music, right? Like I don't like words or anything. I just like kind of ambient background music, stuff I can like really focus and work to and not get too distracted by. And
that's why I struggle with podcasts.
Yeah, exactly. Cause I can't listen to like a podcast and work.
Don't speak to me.
Yeah, exactly. I just need pure distraction or like distraction free.
Okay, right, man. So I want to break into an intermission I call no context.
Okay.
So you simply shoot back either of the two words I say, no context.
Okay.
Twitter or Instagram?
Twitter.
IPA or Vice beer?
IPA.
About or about?
About.
MySpace or Facebook?
MySpace, I guess. I don't know.
Open source software or recurring revenue?
Open source.
Wayne Gretzky or Tony Hawk?
Gretzky.
Photoshop or Sketch?
Sketch.
Stratocaster or Les Paul?
Strat.
And last one, Tailwind CSS or Bootstrap framework?
Tailwind CSS.
So fast forward a little and you got chatty with Adam Wathan and landed up doing freelance work for Laravel, if I'm not mistaken.
That's correct. Yes.
And around this time you were starting to ship these side projects like Hero Patterns and Hero Icons. And this is when you first came on my radar because I was reviewing these one pages back in 2016, October roundabouts.
Oh, that's funny. I remember that. I remember when I made Hero Patterns and that's how I came across you because you posted Hero Patterns on One Page Love, right?
That's it.
Yeah, and it got a lot of traction that day. And I looked at my Google Analytics and I saw it. It was, yeah, that makes sense. Because I was trying to figure out how you first came across on my radar and that was it. That's 100% it.
Yeah, man.
That's funny.
Yeah, so I mean, One Page Love's, it's not a tool used for promotion, if that makes sense. It's like, I just want to list great quality landing pages. But they happen to be great for discovery as well. You know, someone will launch an icon pack or a web app. So yeah, you definitely would have got a couple thousand from One Page Love when it launched.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
So these are fun side projects, man. Why did you build these?
I think the first thing I ever did that was kind of like an open source free side project was I did this icon set, Zondacons. And those I just started drawing one day for a project. Adam and I were gonna, we're working on this project, and I started drawing these icons for them. And then I just got carried away and drew like 200 of them, right, in a period of like a week. And then I realized I had this full set, and I don't know why I just decided to give them away like that. I think I saw Adam building a following on Twitter, and I thought that was pretty cool. Like, in, you know, that becomes an asset, right? I never thought about building a following on Twitter before this. I honestly didn't see the value in Twitter. Like, you know, there's all these influencers on Twitter, and it's just like, well, I didn't know how to achieve that. And I saw Adam doing it, and what all he was doing was just providing value, more or less, right?
Absolutely.
And I'm thinking, well, I can do that by, you know, creating a few open source projects. And it's not just about like building a following. It was also about just like, you know, I was making, working on this fun little project, and what am I going to do with it? I'm just going to like let it sit here and maybe use it for a project. Or so I just published them, and I made a nice little website to go with them. And that was fun. I had a lot of fun doing that. And I got, you know, I got a little boost in my Twitter following, and I started getting recognized in the Laravel community because I had Adam like retweeting it and Taylor retweeting it. And then after that, I was kind of like, that was fun. That was kind of interesting. And I had my second idea was the hero patterns, because another thing worth noting is like the icons I made, there weren't a lot of like SVG icon packs available there. Like, I mean, it was SVG was still kind of a newish concept. Like Sarah Swaydon was talking a lot about it at this time, and I was learning a lot about it through her. So I'm thinking, what's another thing I can kind of do that is kind of in this category? And I thought, well, you know, there's no resources out there for like SVG background patterns. There's that one site called Subtle Patterns.
Yep.
And those are all just like bitmap.
It's the original.
Yeah, that's like the original one, right? They just had like little, like it was like a JPEG you download and you make it a repeatable background pattern. I didn't know if it was achievable to do it with SVG, but Adam kind of helped me figure that out, and we made it achievable. But making the patterns itself was a little bit more tedious to export them and making them work properly. So he helped me with all that stuff. And then I launched that. And because it was kind of a new thing, it kind of got...
It was one of the originals.
Yeah, and it got a lot of traction. It was on Product Hunt, and like you featured it on One Page Love, and I think it still gets... You know what? Let me bring up the analytics for that right now. I haven't looked at it in a long time.
Wow, that would be really interesting. But it's interesting that first mover advantage you had, and you identified it. You were like, hey, is this even possible? You know? Mm-hmm. And you just went and did it. It's quite something you dived into there.
I thought it was a cool idea, right? And then I got the domain name, heropatterns.com. I'm like, that's a great domain name.
Yeah, that's sick.
And I'm like, I have to do something with this. I can't just not... That's like the best domain name I've acquired. That's like, because it's impossible to get good domain names nowadays, right?
No, they're done, dude. Unless you want to go IO.
Yeah, or like .co is the other one that's popular. What am I doing here? So I just have my analytics here for Hero Patterns, and I'll look at the past month.
Jeez, okay.
I have 20,000 sessions in a month, so 21,000. Yeah, so that's pretty good.
How passive is that, dude?
Yeah, and I don't even touch it. And I don't put it, you know what? I don't even put like, I should put like carbon ads on there. They've reached out to me, and I'm just too lazy to like grab the code and plop it on the Hero Patterns.
I'm a big fan of them. Hey, they are great, and they are actually helping monetize lots of sites like those.
Yeah, the way I kind of monetize it is I have a link to, and this kind of is a nice segue into my next project, I have a link to Heroicons on there, right?
Yeah, totally. I mean, that's super smart cross-promotion.
Yeah, it seems like it's the next SVG thing I worked on. So Heroicons are these kind of like larger icons used for like marketing sites, maybe in like the feature section to highlight a feature. And I mean, if you ask me, I think they're, I designed those like years ago. I think they're like almost kind of dated, but I'm still like proud I made them, and I'm proud I went through with that. But you can like change the colors with CSS by just, so I thought that was kind of a clever idea.
I didn't even have these in my notes, but like you've just talked about putting advertising over potential funnel to your hero icons, which is the one that's monetized, right?
Yeah, that's right.
So I wouldn't.
Yeah.
It's like the only thing they can do is go to your the icon pack.
Yeah, I still get like, you know, a sale or two every week from that.
Wow.
So it's since I've launched it. So I think I've made, like, how long have those been out for? Like two and a half years. Yeah. So those, I still get like, I've made like $20,000, $30,000 to date from those, right?
That's amazing. It's such great passive income to fund new projects.
Yeah. And it's just like I said, it's a sale or two every week. It's grown as I've kind of built my following on Twitter, and it's just like kind of a link in my sidebar there, right? And people go to,
of course.
I don't really know where all, like, I'm assuming a lot of the sales come from Hero Patterns. People go to Hero Patterns. And
so, I mean, I've got here that Hero Icons made, you know, 10K in the first few months. Was that the moment you realized that maybe, hey, I don't actually have to work for anyone ever again? Like, I can just ship more of these ideas.
Well, let me step back a little. Adam was a big inspiration about, for the listeners, when I say Adam Wathen, there's like a whole story with him and how he got into my life and stuff. But he's the guy I co-published the book I recently launched with. And he's just one of my best friends. And he's a big inspiration in creating these products that I kind of have like create this passive income, right? So he launched a book called Refactor to Collections, and I don't know much about the subject, the content. It's something to do with Laravel. Honestly, I feel kind of like a noob talking about it. I don't really know much about that at all. It's funny, like I have this following within the Laravel community, but I know nothing about Laravel whatsoever.
I'm kind of the same, but all my dear friends absolutely adore it.
Yeah, it's so. But he launched a book, and he made like a ton of money in the first week. He made a blog post about it, so this is public information. But I think he made like $60,000 in the first week, and that's insane.
In the first week,
yeah.
I've read that he's made $3 million in total, though. He made that public on a comment to Cortland on Indie Hackers
on all of his products. Yeah, that
on everything.
Yeah, that right. That's a bit more than I thought. But he knows his numbers more than I do.
I mean, he wrote it.
I know he's made a ton of money on all this stuff, and his first project was he made like $60K in the first week, and it's since probably gone on to make probably 150, 200K, and then he launched another product, Test Driven Laravel, and it was even more successful. Like every product he does, it just gets more successful than the last. And he just has this framework for marketing it and putting it out there. And he talks a lot about that framework in his blog post that he wrote. It was on Medium. It was like his $60,000 launch that allowed him to quit his job. I'm getting the title wrong, but it's...
I'll link it for sure.
That was super inspiring to me. And when I launched Heroicons, I kind of mimicked his kind of framework, but I was a little bit more lazy about it. I made 10K in the first week for Heroicons, and I should be like super happy with that. Like I'm just totally being like really ungrateful, but I look at Adam's like $60,000 launch. I'm like, oh, that's okay, I guess, right?
I get it, but the bar's high.
But I should be really like proud of that. It's just totally like underselling. Like if you launch something and you make 10K in the first week, you should be proud of yourself. That's a really impressive launch, right?
Anyone listening to this would be fucking stoked to that.
Yeah.
You know, you had good chemistry together. You started off by trying to work on a resume builder. It didn't work out, but you knew there was, you guys wanted to work together. And that kind of just led to the start of the refactoring UI kind of relationship.
That's right. Yeah, you've really done your research. Yeah, you know all this all this backstory a little bit.
I don't think anyone knows what it took for you to actually compose and publish a tweet. And I'd love you to just run through the process. You were saying it took like about 2 weeks per tweet with Adam.
Let's go back a little bit. I was watching Adam was doing these little hot tip things, like these little hot tip tweets, and it was always like the fire emoji and like a little thing explaining what the tip is, and then a screenshot of what it's talking about. And his were mostly involving code, right? And he copied that from West Boss, and West Boss has been doing this for years, right? Mm. And
OG.
Yeah, he's kind of, and I met West Boss last year at Laracon, and he said he even kind of took that idea of a hot tip from someone else. But it's funny, West Boss recently did a hot tip, and someone commented saying, you know, you should do more of these, just like Steve Shoger. I followed up saying, oh no, I actually copied him, but thanks.
That's hilarious.
Anyways, Adam showed me this little framework for like a tip, and he showed me all the traction it gets. It gets like, you know, 300-400 likes.
Wow.
And I'm thinking, that's awesome. That's crazy. And I'm thinking, I could do that for design. The first tips were like, I'd be working on a project because I'd be working at I'd be working for Taylor or Titan at this point. I would take a screenshot of what I was working on. Like I might like realize I did something. It might be like, oh, like I would find myself doing over and over again. It was kind of like a pattern and a little design pattern. And this might be something from like, maybe instead of using a border, I would use like an off-white background to create that distinction of making it a border, right? Like I'd make one section of a panel an off-white background and I'd make the other section white and that would create a border, right?
Yeah.
And I found myself doing that over and over again. I'm like, that's kind of an interesting little insight. And I didn't really think much of it. I took a screenshot of it and tweeted it and it got a lot of traction, right? Like, and when I mean a lot of traction, I mean, this is my first tips. It got like 40 likes and that was like more than anything I've ever done on Twitter, right? I'm like, that's cool. And then for the rest of that week, I was kind of doing that every day. And then they were getting more and more traction. And like, you know, Jeffrey Way, he does Laracast. He tweeted out like, you should follow Steve Shoger. He does these little design tips.
Nice.
And that day I got like 300 new followers. And, but I think it's worth noting that like, I already had like a little bit of a foundation with Hero Patterns. People started following me on Twitter through that. Just through the Laravel community.
Got it.
I had like a little bit of a foundation of a following there. So these tips, they caught on pretty quickly. And then after doing these for like a week, Adam would chime in and he would give me like an idea for a tip. And some of the tips that he was giving me were like better than anything I ever thought of. And I'm like, these are like golden, man. Like, so I just started, he'd give me them and then he'd give me like an idea for a tip. And then I'd go ahead and like create an example that articulates that concept clearly. And this was a combination of like searching on Dribbble for that right example. Like the first one he gave to me was offset box shadows to give it a little bit of, to make it look a little bit more natural. So it looks like the light source is coming from above. Mm. And to me, I never thought that was a tip. I just did that. And it was so like second nature to me. And I never even thought about when I did it. And he said, no, like developers would eat that up, man. I'm like, really?
Got it.
Yeah. And I never thought about this at that point. So that was another big factor that he was bringing ideas to me that I never even thought were tips.
Oh, such a good relationship you guys have.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'd spend time making that little mock-up and then I'd jump on a call with him and we'd kind of figure out how do we frame this with words? How do we articulate this the clearest way? And this is back when Twitter had 140 characters. So we had to make it a little more condensed than we have today.
100%.
And then we added the little fire emoji to it and tweeted it out. And that time was my biggest tip. That got like 1,500 likes, right?
Solid.
And then each tip kind of got more and more. We spent more and more time on each tip, like making each one better than the last.
Hey, this is AJ from Yo Podcast Episode 1. You're already 30 minutes into this episode, so don't forget it's important to stretch and hydrate. Back to you, Rob.
Did you have like a framework for these, for like the rollout? Because it seemed that you were spacing them. You know, it wasn't all of a sudden like, hey, every day, you know, you were like.
Yeah, I think.
Was it like time of day? Did you have like a full roadmap for these?
At the beginning, I was doing them like once a day for like 2 weeks. And then it became like the ideas weren't coming that efficiently. And then, but then I think it was almost like good to do it that quickly at the beginning because people like came back to me. Like I started growing my following really quickly that way. And then I had this reputation of being that the design tip guy.
Yeah.
So now people were like turning on their notifications for me, right? So then I could spread them out a little bit more because people were just waiting for them. They had their notifications turned on. And I knew people had their notifications turned on because they were telling me they did. And
sick.
And I'm thinking, well, I don't want to be annoying with Twitter now, like, because I don't want people turning their notifications off. So I try to tweet only quality stuff.
I mean, what a lesson.
Yeah. So when we did a tip, they got more and more refined where it eventually became to what you see today, where it's like kind of like a before and after shot, right?
Yeah.
The earliest ones weren't even like that. It was just like a screenshot and an explanation. But now it's like, here's an example of something like a developer might do or like just a non-designer would do. And here's what something that looks a little bit more polished. Here's what a designer might do. And here's why it looks good. And it would have the X and the check, right?
Yep.
And then towards like later on, it was like when we had an idea for a tip, it would be like, here's the idea. Okay, I'm going to make a note of this in the sketch file that I've been using for all these tips. And I just have a note of that and it just sits there. And eventually we'd have like kind of like five or six tips, like in the kind of pending tips, right? That we don't really know what we're going to do with yet. This would be a combination of having the note of it and then having taking like screenshots from like websites that have that usage, or they'd be shots from Dribbble and I'd just be plopping them into that sketch file. And then eventually it would turn into me making my own little mock-up of that. And I'll be taking a bunch of inspiration from a bunch of different things and trying to find that perfect example that articulates that concept clearly. So this goes back to like from the original idea for a tip to like publishing it live, putting it on Twitter. That would be like 2 week to 3 week process, right? And I'd be working on it very passively. I'd be working on it like I would do like that early thing, and then I'd make like a little mock-up, and then me and Adam would look at it and we're like, that doesn't really do quite what we want it to do. So we'd scratch that and start over, right?
Wow.
And eventually it would become what it is, what you see when we post it on Twitter. But then the day we post it, it's like we jump on a call and we're talking for sometimes 2 to 3 hours trying to like, how do we frame this? How do we articulate this in words now? And then sometimes we're just staring at it for like a half hour. Like, are there any spelling errors? Are there like any? So like the amount of effort that went into a tip is like the amount of effort that would go into someone writing a blog post, right?
No one knows here. Just no one has any idea. It's so cool, man. It's like proper execution.
Yeah. So the amount of traction these got versus if I were to take this same tip and put it into a blog post, it got way more activity, right? On Twitter. It went viral because it's so quick and so articulate. It's so instant. It's like instant gratification, right? When you see it.
So what I found interesting is that, you know, obviously I was following, you know, the progression of these tip designs over time. And when you actually started dividing them into the red cross and the green tick was sort of the time when other designers who weren't necessarily coders, that you were reminding them of like great design principles. And then like designers were sharing it and like everyone was sharing it. It wasn't just a dev targeted tip.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, that's funny because we're providing, like we thought they were tips for developers, right? And they still are. That's like how we kind of target that's like what most of my audience is developers wanting to learn design or just make their projects look more polished, right?
Yeah.
They grew so big on Twitter that they started to get noticed from designers. And I think designers, they resonate with designers because it was kind of like this back to basics almost.
Mm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
There's always this debate of like flat design versus skeuomorphic design versus whatever, right? And the tips were just like, no, this is just objectively, this is like what makes something more improved, whether it's flat or skeuomorphic.
It's just good design.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, let's just break into a quick, you know, the last intermission. Okay, the section's called true, false, or maybe.
Okay.
You need to shoot back either of those three words, true, false, or maybe. No explanation needed at all. Okay.
Okay, cool.
Music sounds better on vinyl.
Maybe.
Canadians are friendlier than Americans.
Yes, true.
Designers should learn to code.
Maybe.
People are still buying ebooks.
Yes. Yes.
Sketch is the superior design tool.
Maybe.
There is no difference between UX and UI design. They should be classed together.
Maybe.
And last question. Before launching Refactoring UI book, you slept only 2 hours in 3 days.
I'm going to say maybe. That sounds about right. Okay. That was a rough time. That was dark.
So I mean, what is that moment like after working on this thing for what? Almost 18 months? Tweets, videos, promo, blog posts. And then what did you do? Did you hit that tweet to launch or was it the newsletter sent?
From the launch, leading up to the launch, that last week was quite stressful because we've been working on it for like 3-4 months straight. And we realized we had a lot more work to do still. And
it was also December.
This is in December. And we like, so originally when we first started working on the book or even talking about the book, we had all these like original launch dates. We're going to launch it like early 2018 and then like mid 2018, it kept on getting pushed back and back and back. And then, and even in the time where we were working on the book, we had to go to Australia we were both speaking at Laracon AU. So we even had a break in there and we didn't get any work done when we were gone for those 2 weeks.
Sure.
And then we came back and really had to hustle to finish it. So we were working on it like crazy. And then up the final week, we still had a lot of work to do. Plus it was this whole package. So we had to work on all these other components, part of that package. It wasn't just the ebook, right?
Yeah. The color schemes.
Yeah. And from the last 3 days, I was getting no sleep. Like you said, it was like, I think I slept maybe 2-4 hours in 3 days. It was, but I had the adrenaline. I don't know how I didn't. It's almost like after we launched it, it's like I wasn't even tired anymore. I was just like on this high.
Yeah, of course.
We were up till 4 a.m. the day of launch. And when we launched it, Adam kind of does this with all of his courses. He does this kind of silent launch where he doesn't tweet about it. He doesn't send the newsletter or anything. He just publishes the website so you can go purchase the website or go purchase the product on Gumroad, right? Mm. And we did that. This is around 4 a.m. And then we went to lie down for like 2 hours. I didn't sleep in that 2 hours. I went to lie down in bed for a bit. And when we woke up or got back down to our computer, I jumped on a call with him right away. And we refreshed the sales. And like I said, we haven't announced it at all, but it already made $40,000 within that like two hours.
Fuck me.
So that was just people sitting at their, people knew it was coming out that day because we announced that. But people were just sitting at their browser, like refreshing it, I guess.
So what I want to do now is I want to break up these channels, and I'm hoping that, you know, other listeners who have ebooks or products and like they're probably overthinking their launches, but execution's so important and you guys have proved that. And I want to know why you chose Gumroad as your provider, just to start.
Yeah, Gumroad. It's the benefit of Gumroad is that they're this like kind of in between. So they collect all the funds and they pay you out weekly, right?
Yeah.
From a tax point of view, that makes things really simple for us rather than like collecting all of our sales at the end of the year, putting it into a spreadsheet, and like it just makes things really complicated. Now we just take all of the weeks that we collected money from Gumroad and put all together, and that makes it easier to process our taxes, right?
Easy.
I think that's like our main benefit for using it, to be honest.
Okay. And I mean, it's really easy to just add a quick pricing tier. I know you guys had, you know, the divisions, and you had those extra additions for like big companies with, you know, 100 employees and so on.
Yeah, for teams. If you want a license for like 3 employees or 5 employees or whatever, we had like a third tier for that. We introduced 2 tiers. Originally, it was just 1 tier, but it was like $150, right?
Yep.
And when we tweeted out the pricing, people were furious. People were like $150 for an ebook, because we made the mistake of when we were like promoting the book, we were promoting it as just a book. And all along, we intended to make it this whole package, because like, I think it's worth noting that like, we were both working on this. We didn't know how well it was going to do. Like, I assumed it was going to do pretty well because everyone was asking for it, but we didn't know how well it was going to do. And for me to quit my job, and for Adam, who's already making a ton of money on his side projects, to us to be working on this full time and commit to that, we needed to like make a certain amount to make it worthwhile whatsoever, right?
Absolutely.
So to just sell an ebook for like $20, we just didn't see it making that much money to make it worthwhile for us doing. So, but the problem is there's this preconceived notion of like an ebook is only worth like $20, because you can go on Amazon and buy a physical book for $20, right?
Or even $10.
Yeah, exactly. So you need to like throw this other stuff in it to make it worth that extra amount of money. But it's not just that, because like there's stuff in the book that's very concrete, but then there's stuff like with design. Design's a very hand wavy subject, so there's stuff we just can't. We wanted to make the book very concrete. We didn't want to have any hand wavy stuff in there. Mm-hmm. We wanted to try our best to do that. So that's where we added the videos to the package, and that's where there's a few more like hand wavy concepts that are worth seeing.
Yeah, some actual walkthroughs.
Yeah, exactly. And then that's where we added the, we also identified the problem of developers, they have a hard time like defining their color palettes. So we shipped a bunch of color palettes with it. And then the component gallery is the other aspect of it. And that's a collection of, basically if you have an idea for like, if you want to build like a pricing section of your website that has all these different like layout ideas of how you can lay that out. So I think they're all great resources. I stand behind them.
Yeah, yeah.
But we had to throw, so we that was the original one package, but everyone was furious about that. Everyone's like, I can't afford that. And so we were really bummed out about.
I remember it, but there was arguments from both sides though. You had like massive guys backing you as well.
Yeah, there's people backing us, but it's almost like the negative voices like outweigh the positive voices when you're.
Yeah, I mean, they're the ones you remember, and that's what sucks about making products online. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I want to just ask just two questions just on the pricing. You know, you've got there a $99 reduced to $79. You know, it's talked about a launch price and you've still got it there in April. Do you feel like this is just a great strategy everyone should just follow?
Yeah, well, you were actually planning to increase the price for a while but we're still making a ton of sales every day. So it's like,
why would you change that?
Yeah, it's like still selling like crazy every single day. So like, obviously not like it was when it first launched, but
also, I mean, you know, you read about the psychology of pricing where you have three pricing tiers and it sort of leads people to the middle one, but you've got two, which is also still good. That premium package with also the different tiers for all the different companies, you know, are people like opting in for their businesses?
Oh yeah. Like I'll give you some numbers here. I got the Gumroad thing up right now. The team sale, we've made 61 team sales. We have 2,300 of the essential package sales. And then we have 7,200 of the complete package sales.
Okay, amazing. So, I mean, like also on the Yo podcast, I'm actually not trying to, you know, like kind of gloat on people's numbers or anything like that. I'm just trying to understand, you know, is it worth someone releasing that corporate package, you know, for their product? You know, would you recommend having the 20 ebook pricing option? Do you think it's worth it?
People like when you get to like the team license, it actually becomes like, if it's a bit cheaper to buy like a team license of three instead of buying three individual, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And people are going to ask for those either way. People are going to say, I'm going to buy like five copies from you. Can I have a little bit of a discount? So, like, we get those in support all the time.
Totally.
So to offer them right up front, it just makes it a little bit less of a headache when people are emailing you. So we just offer it right away. And it's a bit more of a discount. We've even added additional tiers. Like, we've had like classrooms message us, like teachers ask us, do you have like a classroom deal?
Amazing.
So we've created a tier for that as well since we launched it, right?
Let's just break down, just for other listeners out there that are considering putting time into channels. You know, even for myself, you know, I'm a solo guy, you know, chilling in the office. And I'm wondering, you know, is it worth using YouTube? You know, is it worth writing a Medium article? So let's just start with Medium quick. You guys wrote two articles.
Yes.
And one of them has got 200,000 claps.
Yeah, that one is actually, I found out recently, that is the like biggest Medium post of all time.
It's crazy, man. So like, you know, hindsight, obviously 2020, but that was, must have been pivotal to gain what, newsletter subscribers and Twitter followers.
Yeah. Back to your question about like, is it worth building an audience on Medium and YouTube and whatever platform you choose? I think it is worth spreading yourself out a little bit. We don't know how long Twitter is going to be around for. I have almost 50,000 followers on Twitter, but Twitter might not be around one day. And then where do all those followers go, right?
Yeah, it's smart to disperse, man.
Yeah. And using different mediums, it's a great way to just... Like the blog post on Medium is just essentially like a blog form of all the tips, right? And the YouTube videos were just like just another interesting way to teach design to non-designers and start with the platform feels most natural to you and feels most natural for like the subject that you're sharing.
That's quite a like a Gary Vaynerchuk tip is that, you know, maybe you don't want to be on camera. I'm not confident enough, then don't do that. Then write articles.
Yeah, exactly.
I want to interject here and saying, you guys have this massive less is more approach, which I don't see a lot of other people doing. Most people would have written 20 Medium articles. They would have been tweeting like five times a day. That's like advice people are getting now, you know, on Instagram, five posts a day.
Yeah, exactly.
Comments on hashtags. But you guys were like, how much value can we add on this platform? Let's use YouTube as an example. Five videos leading up to the launch, just five.
Mm-hmm.
And every single one of them was like a 30-minute,
yeah,
super valuable 30 minutes that everyone will learn from. Those took a ton of time to put together, I'm sure. You know, you're talking about speeding up. Did you do voiceover after?
Yeah, that's why there's only five videos. It's not because I don't want to do them anymore. It's because they take so much time to make.
Yeah, it's just interesting how, you know, you could have said we're all in on video and then you just did videos. But you did two Medium articles, tweets every 2 weeks. You did five videos. I assume you got nothing on Instagram, but you did a couple blog posts. You had a newsletter going.
Yeah, we talked about using Instagram because Instagram, we can just recycle the tips on Twitter.
Yeah, it's visual, man. Like people could gobble that up. Yeah.
Yeah, we thought about that. We just were lazy, I guess. I don't know. Like it's like
not lazy. You decided to use the platforms you were comfortable.
Yeah,
on.
Yeah, exactly. So I think it's worth talking about like the YouTube videos and stuff because we're talking about like how condensed the videos are. The original idea for the videos was like it was Adam's idea to do like design takeovers, right? Like taking user submitted designs and refactoring them and making them something a little more polished. That was all Adam's idea. Mm. And that idea was originally the first Medium post. We did the Laravel.io redesign.
I remember.
And that was essentially one of the videos in the form of a blog post, right? And We did that one. And we were planning to do that like once a week. That was like so naive of us to think we could do that. And we did one. We're like, that took way too long. We can't do any more of those. That's nonsense. But we still took a bunch of submissions because we asked everyone to submit us their designs, and we'll make them into a blog post. We were planning to do another one. We thought like, well, we don't have to do like a blog post on this necessarily. We can recycle some of the Twitter tips and put them into a blog post just to get on Medium and see how that does. And originally the blog post actually that we did for Medium, that one that has all the tips in it.
Yeah.
That was originally Smashing Magazine. They reached out to us and asked us to make a blog post for them. And we started doing it. And then we just decided to do it on Medium. And I think that paid off in the end because it did quite well.
I mean, it did. But there's a risk there because Smashing Magazine, million Twitter followers, big audience.
My concern with putting on Smashing Magazine is they would have had a little bit more ownership over it. It would have felt like.
Absolutely.
I don't want to discredit Smashing Magazine at all. Like,
no, of course. Of course. They're doing such a great job on the internet. Hey friends, it's Rob from The Edit. I was unsure if I should include the music convos, but we had so much fun I decided to keep it in, pushing the show to just over an hour. I'd love to know what you think. Too long? Too much banter? Just right? Hit me up at yo@robhope.com or @robhope on Twitter. It's about to get super honest and deep. Buckle up.
So we did that, but then we still had all these submissions that we got, and we still wanted to move forward with these UI breakdowns on Medium. But Adam suggested I make them into like screencasts, right? The original idea he had for that was me just doing like live streams, like me just doing, spending like an hour redesigning it and explaining my process. And that made me a bit nervous, like going back to our conversation about like speaking in front of a microphone and getting out of your comfort zone. I just wasn't ready for doing that. Then I saw the YouTube channel, it's called Binging with Babish.
I haven't watched all their videos, but I've seen them for sure.
Yeah, but you know what I'm talking about. Basically, he takes like recipes,
yes,
from TV shows and recreates them. And when I was watching that, I was more interested in like how he kind of did it. He filmed it, but then he did all his post-production stuff. Like he added the voiceover afterwards, and he had music in the background, and he sped up parts of the video to make it a little more. And I'm thinking I could do that. Like that seems like a little more comfortable for me to do. So I decided to do that. So I recorded the first video, and I spent a lot of time, like the process was like taking a design and then redesigning it, and then kind of like figuring out how do I take this original design and make it into this good design, right, in Sketch. So I had to like redesign the submitted design in Sketch, right? I have to like build it in Sketch and then bring it over into the new design, like instantly change it. And I'm recording myself, like screencasting that. And then
we're using ScreenFlow.
Yeah, I was using ScreenFlow for doing that. And that, so that process of just like redesigning it, the site, I'd spend like a week on that, just making the final design for that. And then I'd spend like another week just like figuring out how to like break this down, bring it from the poor UI to the good UI, or the final UI. Then I had to do all like that like the voiceover and stuff. Like, and I was so nervous behind the mic that I scripted it. Like I wrote down every single word that I said.
Wow, I've done that before, and it's a serious process in the editor.
Yeah. And another thing is that this is my first time like in front of a microphone. So I didn't know my own voice, right? I didn't know how I sounded behind the microphone. So I recorded it all once and I listened back to it. And I'm like, that's not how I sound. Like I know you sound different from what you hear, but I mean, it's really, that's not how I talk. Like I wasn't expressive. I was kind of like, okay guys, welcome back to another edition of Refactor. You know what I mean? It's yeah. So, and I had my wife listen to it, and she goes, no, that's not how you talk. You're way more expressive. Like, think like.
I'm just going to stop you there. Is that you have described pretty much every single obstacle I've had in the last year creating YouTube videos. And it's such a rad thing for people to listen and understand that, you know, you can, you know, sell an ebook, have good products and stuff, but we have the same fears, you know?
Yeah.
It's like we're sitting there for a week going, fuck, my voice sucks. It's like we're all humans.
Yeah, I do want to come back to that in a second, but I'll finish this kind of like workflow for.
Yeah, your wife was saying?
Well, she was saying, yeah, it's not your voice. So I re-recorded it again and it sounded a bit better.
Yeah.
But I still wasn't happy with it. So I recorded a third time because I just wanted it. Like, I think it was worth noting that, like, I've already built a following on Twitter. We have this like really good Medium article. I knew this video was going to get it was going to get eyes on it, right? People were going to watch it because I was going to tweet it out and people were going to go check it out. And so I wanted it to be really good.
Yeah.
This is kind of like startups will talk about like launch early and like just get it out there, right? And prove it. And but it's almost like
you can't do that with a video.
You can't do it when you have a following right off the bat either, because you know people are going to watch it. That's their first impression of it.
You've set the our Medium article's got 200,000 likes. We've got a massive amount of pressure.
Yeah, I've already produced all this quality stuff. Like this, there's a pressure to make this next high quality product. So I recorded the audio 3 times, and then you know I still have this hobby of making music, and I have all these loops I've made over the time. So I had this little background beat that I made, and I put that on there. So that kind of like helped enhance like my little screw ups where I talked funny or whatever. And then I did all post, like edited it down, sped parts up, slow parts down. And that turned into the final product that what it is. So, and like I said, it did really well. The first one did really well. And then it did so well, I'm like, okay, I want to get another one done really right away. So I made another one 2 weeks later and launched it. And that one went viral. Yeah, that one went on like, it was on like the front page Reddit and stuff.
Fuck.
And then it was on Hacker News and it blew up. And that was like way beyond anything I expected. So, and then I made a few more and then I got burnt out doing it. It took so long to make.
Oh, you can burn out so fast on YouTube. No one knows.
Yeah. And people keep asking me to make more, and I really honestly do want to make more. And I,
yeah, let's talk about like, you can have 5 Instagram posts, you can have, 5 tweets, and you can have like 1 Medium article for the same amount of time it takes to make a video.
Yeah. Oh yeah, exactly. So, but I got the 5 out there, and you know, people still go to them.
Yeah, I mean, what's cool about videos is they're probably still getting watched while we're recording this.
Yeah. So more recently, I've been just doing like live streams.
Yeah, I've been watching them,
and like they don't get as much traction. They're like long. They're like drawn out, right?
I think it's the length.
Yeah, it's just kind of like it's an hour long. No one wants to sit around for an hour and watch it. And I think there's like the refactoring UI videos that have all this post production. They're kind of fun to watch. I've had people message me, and they're like, a police officer messaged me and said, I don't do anything what you do, but I just really enjoy watching your videos. Keep it up, right? So I'm like, that's awesome.
Amazing. I want to just interject quick just on the YouTube thing. Maybe I'll slice this in the edit. And
yeah, sure.
I used to do this YouTube show called Yo, and I was just speaking in front of the camera, and like I did it because I was super fucking terrified of it. And I was like, I'm going to create a YouTube show. I don't even know how to edit. I don't even know how this camera works. And I look at the first episodes and I'm an absolute zombie. And I got this tip. Hey, speak like you're speaking to a friend at the pub.
Yeah, exactly.
But what I did, and this is also another tip, is that right behind the camera, I printed my friend Jerry drinking a Guinness. And I still got it. He's like behind the camera drinking a Guinness. So I start speaking. I go, hey guys, so today. And then I'm like, fuck it. I would never speak like this to Jerry. And I'm like, hey guys, yeah. So like, and it's instantly works every single time.
I was going to tell a story earlier, going back to like getting over your nerves and stuff. And
yeah.
I'm now doing like a lot of public speaking, right? Like I go to conferences and I speak at them. But this is all kind of new to me too. And most people kind of take the path to building a following and getting into public speaking. They start at like small meetups and they work their way up to like a bigger stage, right?
Yeah.
But I've kind of taken this path of like, I built a big following on Twitter and I built a big following on all these different channels. And
yes.
So now I'm getting invited to like big conferences before I even ever given a talk anywhere ever. Like my first talk ever was Laracon online. And I know that's like online. It's like at home in the comfort of my own home, but it was in front of 4,000 people.
Fuck.
So I was like incredibly nervous. But in order to prepare for it, like I just wanted to make it as comfortable as possible. So
okay.
I literally read every single word I said during that talk. Like it was all, I had a script in my speaker notes, and it was so, and I rehearsed it so many times. And because it was like live, or because it was online, I could do that. Like no one could tell I was reading something. And I even wrote down the words, like stuff like, okay, now we're going to take a look at this. You know what I mean? I wouldn't be
like to emphasize.
Yeah. And I'd even like emphasize like with bold letters, like what words to like, how to like change my voice and stuff. So, I was so nervous, right?
I love how honest you're getting, man. And this is like people in exactly the same place going like, oh, it's me, man. I've got no self-confidence and stuff. It's like, no, it's not you, man.
No, it's everyone.
Like you were in the other podcast and you were saying that you're just saying yes. And it's like, you definitely don't want to speak live, but you're just saying yes because it's out your comfort zone and it'll probably make you a better speaker.
Yeah, exactly. So now I'm getting more comfortable with that. Like I did the Smashing conference last week.
Yeah.
And Vitaly from Smashing Magazine, he reached out to me like 8 months ago to speak at it. And their whole shtick is that it's all like a live talk. Like you can't use slides. That's their thing.
Yeah, yeah.
And so it has to be kind of like a live design. And when he first pitched that to me, I'm like, yeah, that's not happening.
Yeah, no. Totally.
But I sat on it and kind of said, okay, well, you know, that's a lot of time to prepare, 8 months. I can just like rehearse the hell out of it. And so I said, yes. I'm like, okay, I just have to put myself out there. And
sick.
And it kind of just forces me to do it. And it's like, I can't get out of it now. So, and then I just had to do it and I did it and it went fine, right?
Okay, six. Geez, bro. I mean, I could chat for days. So let's end with three questions quick.
Sure, sure.
You mentioned the Laravel podcast. You're never going to write a book again. Did it ruin you?
I still feel burnt out from it, to be honest. Wow. I was talking about this with Jonathan Rennink yesterday. He's heavily involved in the Tailwind project. Like he helped Adam kind of get it all started and stuff. And he showed me a design he did. I'm like, oh, that's so good, man. Like that's so cool that you did that. And I feel like I can't design anymore. I said to him, he goes, why is that? I'm like, I feel like I'm just burnt out. And like I'll design something and I'll look at it. I'm like, this looks fine. But maybe I just feel like the bar has been risen for myself. Like I just feel like because I was just designing so much for the book. Like every single graphic in the book is like an original.
Do you take a holiday?
Yeah. Well, I've taken like, I haven't been really working for since the book. Like I've been working on like the next project I'm working on, but it's been very slow. And I've been working on a project with Taylor in that time. So nothing like, I've been on a nice kind of break. Let's put it that way.
What do you think the biggest mistake people are making with a UI design is? I know that it's probably a combo of a bunch of things, but do you think there's one standout like lesson you could give them when designing a user interface?
Like that I see like a lot of my audience do is like with like developers, like lack of space is the big thing. And there's a kind of a chapter on this in the book. And this is all Adam's like kind of framework. Like,
okay,
it's almost like you need to like double the amount of space. Like when I see a developer send me their design, it's like double the amount of space you're using. Adam articulated this in the book quite well. He kind of created this framework for like start with too much space. And because often when we add space, it's like we start with like a small amount of space and iteratively add more until it looks right. But he kind of created this framework for like starting with too much white space until it, so it looks like it looks way too much relative to the rest of the page, and slowly remove it until it looks right. I thought that was like a great little insight that he thought of that. Yeah. And I'd say another big thing is use good fonts. Everyone just uses Google fonts, and I get it. It's free and stuff. But the way I learn about new fonts is like, I'll just like go to like a site like One Page Love or a site like all those, you know, inspiration gallery sites. And I'll see a site that I like and I'll inspect the dev tools and see what fonts being used on one of those sites maybe. And that's how I learn about new fonts. And those are usually fonts that come from like a service or like a foundry.
Okay.
I think those like high quality fonts make a huge difference from the problem with Google fonts is like, half of them aren't even good. And the second problem with them is that they're overused. They're everywhere, right? So it's hard to kind of have an original voice with them. So I find like learn about new fonts when you see them online. It's okay. I think it's okay if you see a font you like on one site and use it again on your own site if you think it kind of fits the tone of your project. So yeah.
So back to the most important question. Bands that formed in the last 20 years, what will be remembered in 50 as rock bands?
I mean, I still think like the White Stripes still stand in my head. Like Green Day, I think will be around.
Green Day started more than 20 years ago.
Oh yeah, in the last 20 years.
It's so difficult, man. So I'll give you like just, I've done the research and the only ones I can find is Kings of Leon started exactly in 99.
Oh yeah, Kings of Leon. I don't know if they'll be around though.
And then The Killers started in 2001.
The Killers, eh?
Yeah.
Yeah, they have... When you say like we'll be around in
I love it's become subjective.
Yeah, when you say be around in 50 years, it's like, yeah, the hits will probably be around. We're probably gonna hear those songs. It's like if we talk about like Beatles or Led Zeppelin, like their whole catalog is still relevant, right?
Yep.
But could you say like a Killers, like their entire catalog is gonna be relevant? I don't even know if their entire catalog is relevant now. You know what I mean? It's just like...
Sick, man. Anyway, dude, Steve...
I could talk about music all day, so yeah, go ahead.
I know. I was just saying, we do a second podcast, just music. Like, fuck design.
Let's do it, man.
Rad, man. Anyway, dude, I hope I bump into you one day. Thanks so much for being on the podcast.
Happy to come on anytime and talk music, so...
Cool, man. Thanks, Steve.
Thank you. Yeah, it's been fun.
Wow, we're over an hour in, and if you're still listening, you're what I like to refer to as my people. So please email me at mypeople@robhope.com. I'd love to send you something small. Can you believe we're only 5 episodes in and the guests have been incredible? All I can ask if you're getting value from the show is please tell a friend. Hope you have a radical day. I'll catch you in the next one.